Is Sabbath rest still important to God? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Brant Berglund, your host and study guide author. We're continuing our 13-week series on the first book of the New Testament, the Gospel of Matthew. My conversations for this whole quarter are Troy Fitzgerald and Jennifer Ogden, who serve as pastors at the Walla Walla University Church, and our subject today, rest. If we were to read Matthew's words, he's the only gospel that records the words of Jesus giving this special invitation. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. But he says that he wants to give them rest for their souls. When you hear that word, you both have some theological training. What does this word soul entail?
Jen has the theological training.
I think Jesus is offering this beautiful personal invitation to encounter him. And when we encounter him, there is something that is rejuvenated in us. And I think it can be the totality of us, our body, our mind, our spiritual relationship, our emotions, all of that can be rejuvenated, revitalized, empowered.
That sounds like more than just the idea of soul as most people think of it. I mean, don't most people, when they hear the word soul, they think of this maybe unphysical sort of consciousness that we have. Is that not inherent in this?
I think that would be a limiting factor, personally. Yeah, but
I think the soul is the life in you. It's you know, the composite, that you are someone who lives, and that living is done in time and place. That living is done in a physical body. It is mental. It is it's thoughtful. It is ethereal. It's invisible. And then it's very, very tactile and practical and real. Today. It's now.
We're going to approach this word soul then from the biblical understanding differently than maybe some people in the world might.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to approach it as a holism, whole being. So Jesus is offering us, Jen, you said, for the whole totality of the person. If that's the case, then it's maybe not surprising that over the next few passages of Scripture after this, in chapter 12, Jesus addresses issues of rest in the Jewish world. Mm-hmm. Now, if you were a Jew and you heard the word rest, what would that mean to you, the word rest? What's it tied to?
It's tied to that Old Testament, and it's tied to the creation moment, the ceasing, the stopping. To rest means to stop. It's to the biblical Sabbath.
Creation, 6 days of work God does, and then on the seventh day it says he rested. Was God tired? Did God get tired and needed a breath? His muscles were sore. His voice, he had spoken so much, he needed a rest.
Laryngitis.
Yeah. I doubt it, but I'm really glad that he took time and that it exists still today. And we still have an opportunity to enjoy all that he has made and connect with him. I think maybe you two don't suffer from this, but I have an addiction to busyness and it can run my batteries down. My mental batteries and my physical batteries, definitely, but my spiritual batteries, my ability to talk with God and listen to him, you know, and it's such a nice way to slow down, take a step back, and enjoy time with God.
I mean, God worked and then he rested.
Mm-hmm.
And whether he felt the urge or the need to do that or not, I don't think he was exhausted in the same way that we experience it. We can start attributing to God all of our life attributes and our qualities. It's probably not a healthy thing to do all the time, but in this case, I think it's profound that humans were made to work. As much as we were made to work, we're meant to rest. We're meant to stop.
It speaks to something of our imbalance. Jen, you suggested your penchant for busyness, but I think that's not just you. I know I tend to like to get my hands in things that keep me going, and I'll get my irons in too many fires, right? Then the Sabbath comes along, and Jesus says, time to stop. I know I had a neighbor some years ago when I was working on my master's degree, and I'd be out raking my yard, my leaves in the afternoon, and he'd come by late in the afternoon and say, it's getting on towards evening, a Friday evening. Time to knock off. Time to put the rake away. Start resting. And it's so hard to do when the yard isn't done yet. Yeah. And yet there's something about rest. Mm-hmm. Jesus gives some examples right after this invitation to come to him and to receive rest. We have a picture of Jesus and two pericopes, two stories of Jesus going through the grain fields first, walking with his disciples. And it says they're plucking grain and they're rubbing it in their hands and they're eating it. Now, we live in Walla Walla. We know
what wheat looks like.
We know what wheat
feels
like.
Yeah. Smells like.
I can even tell you what it feels like to rub it in my hands. Mm-hmm. I will admit to have taken a shock of wheat here and there. Mm-hmm. I didn't ask the owners of the field, but I wanted to try this. Mm-hmm. And it's good to chew on. Mm-hmm. It's tasty. Hard on the teeth if you chew it right away. But Jesus and his disciples are accused not of stealing the grain as they're walking through the field, but they're accused of breaking the Sabbath. Why would this be?
Well, the grain's free. I mean, in Leviticus 19, it says the edge of the property. So if they're still living by any of the Old Testament laws, you leave the edge of your property for people to pick. Mm-hmm. So that was accessible for the alien and the poor. Jesus probably was considered among the poor. So it wasn't a crime or a problem to do that. It had to do with the way the Jews, the religious leaders primarily, tried to become more religious, tried to become faithful, tried to become so heroic in their faith that they would never, ever enter into slavery again, like Babylon or like Egypt. In other words, we got to prevent this. And so those 400 years after Babylon, they said, we've got to figure out how to please God, how to do this right, make no mistakes. And so they had ideas of what work was and what work wasn't. And
so they were willing to build a fence around the law to keep people from ever getting too close to breaking the law. So if the law says you shall not drive over 55 miles an hour, they would put a governor on their car that kept them going 45 and never approach that 55-mile-an-hour limit. Mm-hmm. Is there value to doing that, to guarding laws that are important to us? Or does it undermine the spirit of the law? Can it? Or do you find value? I guess I'm not trying to exonerate those who castigated Jesus, but I'm wondering if maybe their motives weren't always so bad? Or
the people that wrote these laws really were the most devoted initially. It just has a way of corrupting you over time. You get very short-sighted. Short-sightedness becomes a form of blindness. So I think that's what happened.
And what happens when you have too many fences around your laws and you stop seeing the value of the law itself? And in this case, the children are growing up learning the fences around the law, not the heart of the law. And the heart of the law here is rest. Mm-hmm. Rest. What do the Pharisees accuse Jesus of doing? Of threshing and harvesting on the Sabbath, which for them, according to their rabbinic law, was illegal. How does Jesus respond? What kind of reaction does he give when they say, oh, what you're doing isn't right? You can't do this.
I think he reminds them of a very interesting story. King David walks into a holy place and eats holy bread.
Table of showbread.
Yeah, they still think of David as their king and as a very important figure in their history. Yeah. And here he is saying, but David did something very similar to this. Wait a minute. Let's examine what we really mean by feeding and by Sabbath and resting and all of those things. I think he challenges them in their own processes of thinking.
And even about holiness, suggesting that David, who should never touch this bread, he's not a priest. That bread is supposed to be for the priest. He goes in and eats it and isn't considered guilty. An interesting story.
Jesus says, I tell you, one greater than the temple is here. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much more messianic can you get than that? One greater than the temple is here. If you had known what these words mean, I desire mercy, not sacrifice, you would have not condemned the innocent.
Mm-hmm.
So, the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. These are his words in response to that. Great story, and then followed it up with a bit of a zinger.
So Jesus and his disciples, it started in the story, they're hungry. And so they get food, and the Pharisees are trying to keep them from eating, suggesting that what is the Sabbath for? Man, if people are hungry, they should be fed, right? So if I see someone in need who's hungry, I should be just as willing to share my field with them and give them what they need. Another vignette about the Sabbath. Right after this, Jesus goes in, we're looking at verses 9 through 14, and we see Jesus going into a synagogue, and there's a man there with a withered hand, and they ask Jesus, this is the Pharisees, the Jewish leaders, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him? It sounds like they're setting him up. Does Jesus take the bait?
Sort of. I think Jesus is always willing to do what is right by the principles of God, which is always ruled by mercy and love. And it, to him, it doesn't matter if it happens to be a Sabbath day or a Tuesday.
Yeah.
He is eager to be about God's business. And if he happens to be in church and sees where he can step in and help, he's willing to do that.
Yeah, I think he takes the bait, grabs the line, pulls the fishing pole out of their hand, and hits back a tennis racket. I just think he changes everything here. Yeah. He doesn't, you know, this is one area that you just aren't going to win the argument with Jesus. This is what he knows.
Mm-hmm. So he heals the man and then tells them, look, you yourselves would rescue animals on the Sabbath, but you won't rescue a human.
He didn't have to ask him to stretch his hand out. He could have healed him without stretching his hand out, but he said, no, get your hand out.
Put it out there for everyone to
Let
see.
Let everybody see what happens, yeah.
And he makes it obvious that the Sabbath is a day to do good. How many people do you know for whom the Sabbath would not be called a day of good and beauty and delight? And yet, what happens in our world if we were to use Sabbath that way? I have to ask the question, is there still value in rest? I know there are some people, some denominations and groups, even some Messianic Jews who argue the Sabbath is no longer to be honored as holy, that Christ's death on the cross abrogated the Sabbath. In 5 seconds, would you say yes or no to that, that it's been abrogated?
It's not. In the last 20 years, there's more on the Sabbath in secular culture than anywhere else.
So. Yeah, absolutely not. I think that it's a beautiful opportunity for us to really enjoy what God has done and to rejuvenate for the next week.
So the invitation of Jesus is still there for us. Come, enter into my rest. Thank you, Pastors Jen and Troy. And my thanks also to David Olson, our program engineer, along with Jared Miller, and to all the rest of you who are listening in for the good word. I'm Brant Berglund.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.